Hello, I'm Phil Little, host of the Private Investigator Experience podcast, where we talk about the life and cases of a PI. When I receive a case, the first thing I do is look at it through the lens of my background in the military, law enforcement, intelligence service, and global security. Then I apply a touch of my biblical worldview to come up with an action plan. When I was thinking about this case with the box of diamonds that turned to rocks before they got to New York, a flood of cases came through my mind. Over the last 45 years at West Coast Detectives, we've worked tens of thousands of cases. I used to pride myself on remembering something about most all of them, but that has slipped away for now as the years have gone by. But a case that popped into my mind, and I've thought about a lot and I've shared a lot about it, was one that had a character out of Agatha Christie's Miss Marvel detective series. Early one spring morning in downtown Los Angeles, my assistant buzzed me and said, "You have a lady who would like to meet with you." I said, "Sure, in." And this little old lady was trotting in, about 5 feet tall, not slender, just a little plump, hurried into my office and sat on a chair in front of my desk. I was looking at a character out of a novel. She was dressed in a hat and gloves and a purse which accented her below-knee flowery dress, and in a firm voice she sat up straight and said, "Mr. Little, I have a serious problem." "Why," I said, "tell me about it." Without going into the case at this time, I will give you some hints for a podcast later. She said, "Somebody is coming to my house and moving things around when I'm gone. There's all kinds of stuff happening, and I want to find out who's doing it. And I'm being followed." I looked at her and I said, "Do you think they followed you to my office? So they'll know you came to hire a detective?" I've heard this story before, and 99% of the time, when things are moving around people's houses, it isn't happening. The people are paranoid and have some other issues. As I tried to get her to see that perhaps there was some other reason that this might be happening, she looked at me and said, "Well, if you don't want to take my money in my case, I'll go someplace that will." And I looked at her and said, "Welcome to West Coast Detectives. You're a client." And the rest will be told later. It became a very interesting case. Today, the case with the box of diamonds that turned to rocks started with a call from a New York stockbroker. And he asked me if we did international cases. And I said, "Yes, we did." And he said, "Well, I have a $3 million problem." He told me an overview to the story, which led us on an 18-month saga from across the United States to Ghana. There was a web of people, some of them he knew that had gotten him into this mess. The friends had told him about the availability of diamonds from Africa at a very reduced price. Well, that should cause a buyer beware. He was very incensed at all this, and he kept saying throughout that first conversation, "I want my money back, and I want these people in jail, or I want both." And we started this case knowing that Nigeria had spilled over into Ghana with a lot of these scam cases about that time. And I also knew that the likelihood of recovering money was going to be very, very slim. To lay out every detail and the path we went down, just getting the facts on this case would take several chapters in a book, so I'll try to do a summary with some of the details. One of the people in his circle had told him about this opportunity and had connected him to this woman that was involved in a scam. We did clear this friend of being involved in the scam. He had just been duped by this woman, and he didn't really know what she was doing. Woman he was dealing with, he had learned that she was living in the States, but also had a home in Ghana, and that she traveled back and forth a lot. And let's call her Mary Diamond. I think that's an appropriate name. And that was where we started with a deep dive into who was this woman. When we started the hunt, we didn't find much. And what we did find was outdated and down dead ends. But dead ends don't stop us here at West Coast Detectives. And we continued on from several days digging and going down more alleys and dead ends and making contacts everywhere we could. And we had a hit on a name and an address in Georgia that we felt like was connected to our suspect, Mary Diamond. Along the way, we were also developing other ID factors through government sources on this woman. And we learned that she had been traveling a lot between the U.S. and Ghana, and we had also developed her passport information. As we were working on the background, I contacted my OSAC contacts. OSAC is the security organization that was set up by the State Department to work with the private sector security. And we have a contact at each embassy around the world, and it's usually the RSO, the regional security officer, who we can contact and get information on what's going on the ground in their particular area. I made contact with the RSO in Ghana and found that they have had hundreds of complaints about these scams. In fact, so many they had trouble keeping track of them. And I learned that there were many complaints about the diamond scam, as well as all kinds of other precious metals. And our subject's name had come up in some of the complaints that the embassy had. It looks like I will be on a plane to Ghana. This was much bigger than we had imagined. Our focus expanded on finding out who the subject was and where she was living in the U.S., which had led us to this address down in Georgia. And it was a family member tied to the subject. And once we did a recon on the residence, we set up surveillance and then initiated some pretext interviews in the neighborhood and discovered our subject had been seen there. Now you might say, what's a pretext interview? Well, we develop a survey out of a subject. Maybe it's a current event. Maybe it's a new law, or maybe it's about a figure, a famous person or something that we would find an interest among the people would be willing to talk about it. So we would get a number of questions, develop this survey, put it on a clipboard, and then our investigators, sometimes female investigators who would be very personable, and start knocking on doors. And you would be amazed at what people would tell you. And during those interviews then, you can weave in what's going on in the neighborhood around and talk about who's living where and neighbors they know that might be interested in our survey and people traveling. Do they travel a lot? And we learn from the neighbors that this subject, who was a sister of the neighbor living next door to these people, that traveled a lot between Ghana. After we determined that this was her location, and that she was actually in Ghana at this time, we now put this on hold working there because we knew where we could find her if she came back to the States. And we'd also learned that Miss Diamond was a U.S. citizen and was also a citizen of Ghana and had a home there. Well, at this point, we had all the background we could get on the subject and her activities in the States, so we contacted our associate company and Ghana to do work up there on her and make sure she was there and anything they could pick up down there about her. As the weeks went by with work both in Ghana and the U.S., we found that our subject's name kept coming up, being involved with victims of other similar crimes in the U.S. And some of these had been reported to the embassy down in Ghana. As I begin to talk more to the RSO and people in Ghana, I learned that this organization was not a fly by night. This was well organized. And what they were doing, they had to have help within the Ghanaian government, or at least of people working within the government, as well as banking. And I didn't realize how deep it was until later, both for the government and banking. I realized, too, the scope of this crime operation, why wasn't the FBI involved? And we learned that part of the reason was the way that they'd worked these scams. It made it hard to develop evidence that would stand up in court. And you had to cross borders, cross countries, which made it much more difficult to build a case. And then you take the issue with the FBI having a money factor on a case before they would take it. And the FBI limited that time before they would look at a case or get involved. It had to have at least a $5 million loss. And you say, how could that be? They're supposed to be working everything. Well, there are thousands and thousands of these cases, and they just did not have the ability. And so they had, at that time, a $5 million. And unless you knew somebody that within the FBI that you could get them to take a look at a case, that's just the way it was. And many smaller police departments and county, state, or local have also the same type of things many times on cases that they can take just because of the manpower situation. from past experience on international cases, we knew that the client's money, if it got into these foreign countries, was long gone. And even though we didn't know yet the sophistication of this operation, we assumed that there had to be bankers working with them also. And as the information started coming in from Ghana, we found that the agents had located her home and she was there in residence and confirmed that from the surveillance. And they were also finding that she was coming up connected to some very dangerous people in Ghana, gangs, groups, and were known for violent activity and connected to some terrorist organizations and operations. I started making travel arrangements by organizing the availability of both the ground agents and the RSO at the embassy in Ghana. And soon I found myself on a flight from LA to DC and connected to Ghana. Let the game begin. And did it begin? It began with determining that the only way I was going to get help from the police department in Ghana was to fund their investigators because they didn't have money to buy gas to go out in the field and work, and also infiltrating banking circles because some high-level bankers were working with these criminal gangs, getting the money out the next day when millions of dollars would hit the bank. And down there, they had banking laws that there were supposed to be controls and cash was supposed to be examined and know where it's going and who, what, when, and where. Well, wires would come in, and the next day, this money would be taken out of these banks in cash and disbursed. So this was very involved. It got interesting. Let me tell you my experience there on the ground, and I'll tell you some of those stories as we continue on this. But we've gone to this point, I think, where I'm going to take a break so you don't get bored and I lose you. And I'm going to tease a little bit for the next time. We'll be looking at some of these events of on the chase after people and them chasing us, and with a large armored vehicle crashing through a large double gate at a walled compound where some of these criminals were working. And we'll catch up on that next time with the final of how this case worked out and what the future for our client was. I appreciate all the comments and emails. I look forward to hearing from you with your questions, ideas, or just saying hi. Please, can you help me by liking, sharing, subscribing, and hit that notification bell? You know the drill, and that will give you the next post when it comes out. You can leave your comments on any of the platforms, or you can email me directly at plittlepi777@gmail.com. Until next time, be safe. May God bless you, your family, and may God bless America.